have any teaching philosophies that you follow?
If I can consider this a philosophy or not, but one of the things that I just like always tell my students, I always tell them, like, whenever you don't understand, it is the teacher's problem. Because, like, you know, some people, like, they get this feeling of not understanding something and they feel shy to ask. Good. Another thing, and I think it's really important, that inside a classroom, now I'm talking about groups, I'm not talking about like individual classes, deal with like the mindset of unit. Good. Like, we're one unit, we all learn together. For an example, like, if correcting one person, it means I'm doing this to all of the rest. Good. Because the time when you learn the most is the time when you are not corrected. Maybe like someone else in front of you is being corrected, because it's like a chess game. You know, if we're playing a chess game and there is someone watching, like, they probably see more moves.
How, you know, you involve chess in that. And you're right, people do learn by just being objective than being subjective experience. So that's really an eye-opener. What are some warm-ups or introductions?
Let me begin with talking about the importance of warm-ups, especially on the first day, like when your students meet you for the first time. You know this saying of, like, you only get one chance to make a good first impression? This is like the most important moment in the student's life. So if they feel they are in the mood, like, they will continue with you and it will be smooth. Some types of warm-ups that I love, the thing of who am I? For example, like, my name on the board, and I'll write like some numbers and I'll ask my students to interpret these numbers. For example, I would write 16 and I'll ask them, what does that mean? Some may think, like, is it your birthday? Like, is it your favorite number? Good. Do it with the students like by turn, like they're going to do the same. So they get to know each other more and they start it with fun, because people are most passionate when they talk about themselves.
I never heard of that game before, that type of warm-up. And so it sounds really interesting, your students and like learning about you. And you're right, a lot of people, when they first introduce themselves, they just love to talk about themselves. And that's really okay too. Have you faced any challenges while teaching?
Like, the biggest challenge in my country, in Egypt, is the generation gap. Because, like, I used to have like people in their 40s and people in their 20s in the same classroom. There is a big gap, like, in the age mindset. But in the beginning, I struggled to handle this. But by time, I found out like some ways and techniques to make them work. So for an example, like, I would use pair teams, like or pair groups or pair work, to put like an old guy with a younger one. So like they get to have this chemistry between each other and feel like all here to learn. There's no difference, because like we have this traditional mindset in Egypt that you're younger than me, so it doesn't mean you'll teach me. Good. Like, everything is changing these days.
Have the different learning styles among the like younger generation and older generation. So that's great that you're introducing that, where it's like a cohesive synergy, inviting different learning experiences. Have that work in some cases when the younger generation, older generation are grouped together in your classes?
The teacher plays a very important role here. Good, because it also starts like on the first day, because once you get them in the mood, okay, like you get them the awareness they need, like you're learning a language. So it has nothing to do with your age. Whenever I get into something new, I just forget my years of experience. I feel I'm a baby. If you can handle this from the first minute in the class, they will go okay with it.
Yeah, you're right. Just introducing something right then and there at the first start.
With your supervision, because we are different and some people might be very sensitive. You have to consider this also.
How about parenting, doing well in your class with someone that...
The big challenges for me, it was really hard in the beginning, maybe in the first 6 months, to tell someone you are repeating the level, like you have failed. It also has to come beforehand, and you go step by step, and you always give them proper feedback, clear what do they need to work on. And the process here like starts backstages, because it goes back to the placement test. If I have a group and like there is one person who's really weak, most probably it means he's not the same level. Maybe he's lower or something. Private classes or one classes, it's totally fine and it's handleable. But with groups, like they might feel really embarrassed because they would leave the class on the second session or something. It also comes by experience. By the time you get to be cordial, like you are friendly but not very formal, do you know this word? It was a challenge. You have to be honest with the student. like integrity is the key factor here to make them accept the feedback or accept their mistakes or faults.
That's really an eye-opener. Thank you so much for just breaking that down for us. Did being an English language teacher inspire you to learn a second?
Since I was a child, I loved languages. Good. I was like really bad at scientific subjects, but I was good at languages at school. I started Spanish, that was a long time ago, but I still remember the basics. And now, like, I have a plan to work on my Spanish to strengthen it. And you won't believe this. The thing that I'm studying, like, side to side by English is Arabic. Good, because, like, the classic Arabic, yeah. Classic Arabic is totally different from, like, the Egyptian dialect. No country speaks classic Arabic nowadays. But it's really important because it is used in books and novels.
If it's not being spoken widely, how will you be able to familiarize yourself?
Like, Arabic has become, like, very viral now because a lot of people are learning Arabic as a second or a third language. So in this case, like, you teach the student using the classic Arabic. Because Egyptian dialect has no rules. Like, it's very hard to teach syntax or grammar for Egyptian dialect. A mix of things, Turkish and Persian. Like, nowadays, you'll find, like, most of youth speak, they always involve, like, words from other languages, especially English.
Wow. So when they're speaking Arabic, they're also using, like, English in there, a word salad.
The social media has, like, a very strong influence. Most of, like, brand is written in English.
Yeah, you're right. English is very, like, popular language, and so you would get a lot of influence on English than, like, the other dialects and languages, which are very important. Because they hold a lot of history in them. If you know that there's Egyptian dialect or language, what happened in that history or what happened in that language? Yeah. Why did it become archaic? But yeah, that's pretty awesome. How's this your success in learning Spanish?
As you know, like, I'm new to America. Like, I haven't gone to so many places. I haven't made friends yet. Good thing of the bright side is that, like, a lot of people in New Jersey speak Spanish. Practicing environment.
You most definitely will. America is very big with Spanish. It's like, in certain regions, Spanish is very spoken widely. So you'll definitely get that feedback. Do you have any preferences in teaching adults or children in your class?
Fortunately, I prefer teaching adults. Because I believe I'm not very good at dealing with kids. But I'm working in studying pedagogy, how you teach kids. I tried so many times, but I don't feel I perform the same as when I deal with adults. Like, it's, for me, it's easier to make them understand. And, like, it's, like, I'm sorry for saying this, but it's easier to discipline them. Like, I'm not very good at this. Some people are really talented. So I need to acquire this skill because it's very important.
Everyone has their teaching styles. And so dealing with children, that's like a whole different dynamics. Because when you're dealing with kids, you're not only teaching, but you're also dealing with their behavior. Is it necessary to have a side hustle or an additional source of income while teaching?
And it depends on the country, because tell you why. Two of my friends, they live in Russia and they work as English teachers and they are totally fine. They need to do nothing besides this, okay? But, like, speaking of Egypt, no, like, I think you have, but like, things are different in Egypt. Whatever you do, like, you'll need to have a side hustle. I don't know about America yet. I haven't tried yet. And I don't know when I'll be in the market. So, yes, like, I believe you'll need something based on my country, based on my region. If you teach English in Egypt, like, you need to have another thing. And I'd prefer this thing to be passive income. So if you do, for example, like online courses or a YouTube channel or a podcast like this, like, this is my personal opinion and this is what I feel comfortable to do. Because, you know, most of English teachers, they don't love commitment. They do something that they love. Not only most of English teachers, most of freelancers, because I've been a freelancer English teacher for a very long time. So if you do this, it would be great. But based on the region, if you are in a place that pays well, so, like, no need for any other source of income.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Adnan, or in Arabic, Adnan. I'm from Egypt, 29. I've started the teaching just by chance. Yeah, I always had this dream, but in 2015, I took a course in a learning center, and after a few months, they offered me a job, and I really want to thank these people, okay? Like, owe them a lot. Once I got into teaching, I discovered that this is my passion. And guess what? I'm a big fan of teaching more than the English language itself. So, like, if I can teach some other thing, I would do it. My hobbies are reading and writing, especially in Arabic. My writing skill, a period of time, wasn't that good. I've been working on it and it got really improved. What else of my hobbies? I love psychology. I read about psychology a lot. They are all related, teaching and psychology and writing.
And you like teaching. And so what would be the next thing if it's not English?
Psychology? Yes, because like I've studied like some courses about psychology and now I'm doing my master's in business. I think I'll be specialized in managerial psychology because like also like 3 years of experience in recruitment, the full-timer. The thing is, I feel I'm lost because I love to do a lot of things at the same time, but you just move baby steps in each and every one. I switch between them from time to time. Like I keep one as a full-time and I turn the other one into a free freelancing job or a part-time job. But I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
A lot of people, especially creatives, they're always doing like one thing or the other. So that is pretty cool to have those type of different interests that you have a passion for. What cultural norms did you encounter?
I had different students from different nationalities, but they were all Arabs at the end. So like the differences inside the classroom don't really show. Maybe like they would show in another context, hangout or something, with someone from different nationality, the way they eat. I can't remember something that is significant. Maybe Brazilian student. Clear thing for me was the generation gap and how people like look at you. My teacher is younger than me. This is the only thing.
Some teachers do encounter that, but because you lived in a certain region and so your demographic was just that one demographic. Commonly thought that one can teach remotely online from anywhere in the world, allowing a... nomadic lifestyle.
Technology is one of the greatest inventions in the human history, especially the internet. I'm talking about internet. I remember a time when I had no job. I was working only remote from home. I had students in Malaysia and I had students in America and in Emirates and in Egypt while I was just staying at my home. It overcomes the distance. So I think, yes, in the past, I didn't really like online classes because there is something missing. Everything is changing, like, even though, like, our mindsets are changing. I love teaching, and now I've started loving this online thing or technology.
A lot of teachers, right, who have worked mostly just in classroom, they have to be more familiar with the online platform. So it's a learning curve for a lot of people. And then you're saying that that one missing component from online is sometimes that real human contact, that energy. What are some advice you would give someone that who is aspiring to be in English?
I would advise them technically to strengthen their four language skills. Prioritize some and neglect the others because like you will need them. If you don't need them now, like you will be in a bad need for them in the future. This is technically speaking. Some other piece of advice, teaching is all about trust. I remember my supervisor told me once, if your students love you, they would turn a blind eye to your mistakes. So don't abuse this trust because I might feel I'm okay, they love me, they would give me a good feedback. So as a result, you won't prepare properly. It's a game of trust. Don't misuse it and be honest to yourself and to your students. The tiniest thing... the tiniest thing you put an effort for, you will find it. Okay, like you will bear this fruit in the future.
Yeah, that is beautiful. That's awesome advice and suggestions for aspiring teachers. What is one common myth about being an English language teacher that you bunk for us?
English teachers don't make mistakes and they know everything. This is the first one. Maybe another thing is related to English speakers in general, not only students or teachers, English speakers. In my country, it is thought that to be good at English, it means you mustn't have an accent. And here I mean, like your mother tongue accent doesn't affect your second language. But it's totally okay. And according to Andrew IELTS, there is nothing called accent. They only focus on the pronunciation. If you don't speak, for example, American or British like you are bad at English, and like a lot of people are ashamed of this because it's stereotype in my country, but it's a fallacy. Like it's just a fallacy, and like nobody has the right to judge you according to your accent properly. You don't make mistakes. You are intelligible while speaking, so you are okay, you're good.
Yes, an accent is not at all important as long as you're able to communicate your point across and everyone understands each other more or less. And so hopefully your words will inspire and also provide confidence for people that accents and you are from Egypt. And so I were talking and your accent is there, but it's not a hindrance because you're speaking very clearly and legibly. And so accent is not important, guys. Is it better to teach privately or teach at a school?
That I love teaching adults, so I'd go with privately, because like in schools they have a lot of restrictions, and sometimes you won't be only handling the student but also their parents. I think I'm not okay with this. I don't know if like I'd be able in the future to study more and get into the depth of pedagogy, as I mentioned. I may change my opinion, but for time being, just adults.
I definitely relate to that as well. Teaching adults are way more disciplined, and you don't have to have all those type of interference from parents, the kids behave. Do you have an English language business course or a business?
I don't know if it's going to be a business in the future or not. I've started my YouTube channel and a Facebook page related to this, thinking of just linking some other like online platforms with this, like the reason of business. I need it to be a source of income for me, and I wish it becomes a big thing in the future.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Hopefully we'll be waiting and anticipating a course or a service from you, because you are a really inspiring, great teacher. Where can people find you
on the internet? The Facebook page and the YouTube channel page is GRASP, GRASP dash Adnan Muhammad, ADNAN Muhammad, MOHAMED.
For just sharing your beautiful story, your experience as English language teacher. I know you'll be such an inspiration for others. And also, thank you so much for coming on the Teaching Online English platform. That was an amazing episode with Teaching Online English Podcast. Do one act of kindness today and subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to share it. We are super appreciative of your support. And please visit www.teachingonlineenglish.com for exclusive content, resources on getting an English language job, and reading up on some helpful articles. Thank you so much again for your support.